Hello and welcome. My name is Greg Martinelli, and this is the Ag Sales Professional Podcast. My mission in life is to make you the best salesperson or sales manager possible in agribusiness. Well, I'm really excited today to have a guest on our podcast. Wayne Schoenberg is a 45-year practicing trial attorney. And the reason you might wonder why I would have someone on a sales podcast that's a trial attorney is this. I've always promoted the ability to ask good questions is one of the key hallmarks of being good at sales and finding out information, digging into the bottom line and understanding what a customer wants before you go out there and try to sell them anything. And two of the people that I think are really good at that are police officers who do investigations and trial and attorneys who have to dig into. And in my sales training, I liken a good sales questioning process to that which attorneys go through. And so I've asked Wayne, who I've known for 3 years here in the St. Louis area in some of the clubs. He's part of the National Speakers Association, and he's a certified coach, professional coach. He's a speaker. And his claim to fame is he solves the problem of thinking you can't. And so he has a speaking business along with also being a trial attorney. But I'd like to welcome you, Wayne, to our podcast. And just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've become better at asking questions.
Well, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Greg. A little bit about myself. I don't know that there's enough time. You know, I'm a trial lawyer, and we're all egomaniacs, so it's hard to sum this all up in less than a couple of hours, but I'm glad to try. I've lived in the St. Louis area for most of my life. I was born in New Orleans, and I went to law school at the University of Missouri after I served in the Army, and just wanted to make a living, so I decided to start trying lawsuits. I back in the day before we had a public defender system, I would go over and get all the appointed cases because nobody else wanted to do it, but they paid some money. So I was looking for some money, and I started trying lawsuits. I've tried at this point, clearly over 200 jury trials to conclusion. That means I've probably prepared 2,000. The trial rate is, you know, you maybe try 10% of what you prepare. And I have had to, we're talking about questioning, and I've thought a lot about this since you asked me to do this. There's sort of three phases in a trial lawyer's questioning basket, all right, or timeline. I start with the questions that I ask the people when they come in to see me. Why are you here to see me? What brought you here? And that ranges from what their legal problem is to what their source is. Who sent you here? That's important too, and I'll talk about that. Phase two is what we call the discovery process. In the discovery process is where we take depositions, and we also deal in written questions. Written questions are called interrogatories, and we have to frame questions in a certain way. And certainly if you don't frame them correctly, the lawyer on the other side is going to file objections, and then you have to waste a trip to the courthouse where you argue over whether this question asks the right question. Sure. And then the third phase is the trial phase. And that's a whole different skill set. But the underlying premise that has really come through to me is you always hear people say, never ask a question you don't know the answer to.
Yes.
And that really only applies to a limited set of circumstances. Never ask a question you really don't want to know the answer to.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about that. So,
well, look, I get cold call all the time in the speaker business. People call my speaker business cold call, and all of my calls go through to my cell phone, and I answer my phone. I think that's important from a contact point of view. I don't go through legal assistance or answering services. Sure. When my phone rings, I answer. And they always start with, hi, is this Wayne Schoenberg? Well, they want to know the answer to that. And I tell them, yeah, that's, how are you doing today, Wayne?
Yeah.
You really want to know? My response is generally, thank you for calling to check on my welfare. Let me tell you how I'm doing. I would think that just that thought process about not asking a question you don't want to know the answer to. So let's go. You and I have talked about this before. Where did I learn about questioning?
Yeah, that'd be a good, where did you get your formal or informal training?
My informal training was a lot more important than my formal training. My father was a an intelligence officer in North Africa during World War II, and he had two jobs. He briefed pilots before they went out on bombing raids, and he interrogated prisoners when they caught him in the area.
Oh, jeez.
And he was very good at it, and he brought those skills. Plus, he was a newsman, so I grew up in the home of a person whose job was to ask questions of people, and yeah. I absorbed a lot of that because it was used on me. So, you know, as a teenage boy, I know you probably never did this, Greg, but as a teenage boy, I, from time to time, got into situations that I really didn't want to admit to. And my father would start asking me questions. What'd you do last night? Harry and I hung out.
Yeah,
where? Well, Harry and I hung out over by the basketball court. Oh, really? What time did you get there? Well, I could literally hear the door slamming shut on me as he led me down.
Yeah. You were slipping down through the funnel. You're slowly, you know, just it's going nowhere good.
Yeah. You can't get back up. You've committed. He gets you to commit to something that you don't want to commit to. And I think that that applies to everything. So I learned about questioning that way, and it's really been helpful. And I use that in the discovery phase. So let me go to phase one. Phase one is the client comes in phase. I want to learn about that client. So I want to ask them questions. I want to establish a rapport with them. I want to get them talking. I want them to be comfortable with me. And one of the ways I do that is get them to tell me a story about something. And you have to think about what you're trying to draw out. So even in my initial interview with them, you come in and I sit down, tell me a little bit about yourself, Greg, and you'll start off and I'll pick something then that you'll say. I'll say, tell me more about that. And if I can get you into a storytelling phase, and it can be something as simple as I was on my way I had this accident while I was on my way to take my mother to the hospital. Well, tell me more about that. Why were you taking your mother to the hospital? You'll launch into a story. You'll become more comfortable.
Sure.
And once that happens, then you're going to open up to me a little more.
Right.
And that's really important because I need to know everything about you. I need to know everything about your case. I will say that there are people that go on forever and never seem to get to the point, but that's part of my job is to listen to that because I might be able to glean something out of that that's important. So in that phase, I just call that the interview phase. When we move to the case, there are two phases, the trial phase and the discovery phase. I learned a great trick from a lady. Anna Beck was her name. I don't know if Anna still practices law. I learned this such a long time ago. A deposition, for those of you who are your listeners who don't know, a deposition is when we call a witness, subpoena a witness or do it by agreement or a party to a lawsuit into a room with all of the lawyers. There might just be two lawyers. There might be 20 lawyers.
Right.
And a court reporter. And the witness is put under oath and we ask them questions. And that's the style of the questions is totally different than the courtroom because we can ask questions we don't know the answer to. That's what we call it is discovery. We're trying to discover what that person knows.
Right.
Now, I will frequently say to especially the other party, I used to do a lot of accident work, personal injury work, and I will say to the other party, I'll say, now, Greg, I don't know anything about this case, really, and so I'm here in this deposition to try and learn something from you, because they want to tell their side, right?
Yep, right.
And they go into that deposition having been told, hey, this Wayne guy is going to tear you apart, and he's going to make you say all this terrible stuff, and so they're right. really bundled up.
Exactly. And, just like a customer. Yep, exactly.
They don't want to release anything to me. So I saw Anna Beck come in one time and it just floored me and I've done it ever since. Anna Beck comes into the room and my client's sitting there just all bundled up and she reaches over and she goes, hi, Greg, I'm Anna Beck and I'm the lawyer for the insurance company here and I'm just here to ask you some questions and I want you to be comfortable. Just relax and if you have anything that's it's really nice to meet you. This is nice to you. Nice to be here. Don't a nice office and everything. And just really chummed the people up. Oh, well, would tell her anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think establishing a rapport. I know that establishing a rapport with anybody in that questioning situation is important. And so when salespeople call on me, and I'm a horrible person to call on, I'm bundled up all the time.
Sure.
There's got to be some rapport. And again, we go back to the thing, don't ask me a bunch of questions you don't want to know the answer to. Let's not chat it up just for the sake of chatting it up. Get to the point. What do you have that I need?
Right.
Okay. So in the discovery phase, I'm asking questions that are going to get you to talk and get you to ramble on, because you'll say something, hopefully you'll say something that I need for the trial phase.
Exactly.
And then the trial phase is, let's go back to the deposition phase. The discovery phase is, I want you to say whatever it is you want to say. In other words, I tell my clients, I want to know all of the bad stuff they are going to say about you.
Right.
Clients are frequently unnerved by the fact that I'm saying, you know, and what else bad did Greg
right.
do?
Exactly. So you can be prepared for, you know.
Yeah.
You don't want to be surprised and caught flat-footed by your client all of a sudden revealing that they've got a legal charge against them 4 years ago that they didn't tell you about.
Yeah, exactly. I want these people to tell me every bad thing they can about my client in the discovery phase, because sure. I can then file a motion to keep them from saying irrelevant bad stuff right. in the trial phase, but I need to know it all. So that's the purpose of those questions, is get you to open up, get you to tell me everything you possibly know. In the trial phase, my questions are designed to make you say what I want you to say.
Okay. Now you changed it from discovery and open-ended, like, let's just talk about anything, to now I'm taking you down a path, so to speak, towards an end goal.
Absolutely. I have structured my questions. I can go into a discovery deposition with just an outline of questions to cover certain topics and categories. By the time I get to trial, I've got very specific questions that I'm going to ask you that I know what the answer is going to be. And I have structured those together in a linear fashion that will take you from point A to point Z by the map that I have set out.
And this is very, what you've described is very similar to a questioning. When I go through training, I do introductory, medium level, and then I do three levels of questions. It's introductory, medium, and then high value questions. And the high value questions being, you know, much more insightful and important and stuff that you have to have rapport. And so it kind of follows along with your, you know, here's what I want to do when I first get to meet the people. I want to get to establish the rapport and all that, and then move into get some more information about them, get them to open up, talk a lot. And now the difficult part is, okay, I've got a goal at the end of this conversation, these series of questions, and I want to get to that goal, and storyboarding your questions to get to that. So if you've told me all that, and I think when salespeople struggle is, one, they'll try to do all that questioning in one meeting, the very first meeting sometimes.
Yeah.
So, you know, especially new salespeople will be like, well, I got to go in, I got to meet him my very first time and then sell them. And it's like, you got a long history, especially agribusiness, where it can be 10, 20 sales calls before you get to the point where you finally get them to agree to just try your products. And so I think the important thing, and this is the reason I've talked about using strategies that attorneys and police investigators use, is that there's a purpose at that one point after the discovery is all done and after they get a lot of information from you. It's there's a purpose to these questions, and they're taking you down like your father took you down. There's this path. And the reason it's not to entrap them, I mean, and police probably do it so they can entrap them, and you're trying to get a witness to say something. But mostly it's because customers want, I call it slipping out of the funnel, is they're busy. They got a current supplier. They don't want another supplier on hand. They get called on by hundreds of salespeople. At the end, if you don't have these good answers, they slip out from underneath. They slip out of the funnel. They're like, no, that's not important to me, because you didn't establish the impact of how important it was in the early questions. And I think for your case, if you don't know the answers, and when you get to the trial, your witness can, so to speak, slip out from under you by not, you know, but you not discovering what you needed to discover earlier. Because it's too late once you're in trial, and then all of a sudden there's a surprise ending like, oh, geez, I didn't ask that question, and so now I don't know the answer. And that's what happens a lot of salespeople is they get to the end, and they get to the to your part, the trial, and they go to close, and it's like, oops, I forgot to ask that part, whether how important this was financially to them. And so I think it's what you're talking about is extremely applicable to the selling process and how you would position it.
Well, the way you pointed out there, which I found very interesting, I like the fact that, that you too have this three-phase system. And I, until you asked me to do this, I had never thought that whole process through. You know,
sure.
I get up in the morning, I go to work, and I just do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But clearly, yes, that's what you want to do in the very beginning. And again, there's a say, Joel Block. Do you know Joel?
I do. Yep, exactly. Yep.
Joel had me on his podcast some time ago, and it was like a light went off when I got done talking. He said, well, you're actually in the sales business, aren't you, as a trial lawyer?
Yeah.
Said, sure. I'm showing up. I've got 12 prospects there that I want to do something that they have no idea before they walked in. They had no idea that somebody's going to ask them to do this.
Sure.
And I have to go through that process. So I'm also in the sales business. The law field is a competitive business. So there are people that come in who have gotten me off the internet. And, you know, the best ones are the referrals where their friends send them in. You know, they're going to do business with you, but there are strangers that, that come in. And so establishing that rapport early on, letting I let those people know that I'm interested in them, that I'm interested in achieving their goal, whatever their goal is. One of the questions I always ask people is, Greg, after we go through and I hear all about it and everything, whether it's a criminal case or a personal injury case, and I just do criminal work now, but a lady was in a couple of days ago. She has 5 felonies pending against her. She's a drug addict, and she's unfortunately been stopped driving and they have found with controlled substances. And so after we went through all of this, I just looked at her and I said, now, Alice, what do you see as a suitable outcome to this case?
Right.
So sometimes their wishes are unrealistic.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
I don't feel the need to tell them that at that particular time, but I don't promise them that I'll get that. I say, well, okay, well, at least I know what the goal is. And I think that's important in the sales thing and establishing the rapport in your early phase.
Absolutely.
And then when you come back, you ask those questions that help you learn more about that customer's needs.
You've said some stuff in here, a couple of things. Getting to know them better, you're letting them expound. And so this is what I impart on sales training is go in there, do a tour, do all this stuff, get them to talk. And there might be one little tidbit of information that comes out that will help you connect that you wouldn't have if you had just gone in and started talking about your fertilizer or your seed or your tractor. Knowing the way that your business ties into their rest of their operation and their overall goal, because they're not just looking to solve problems of a tractor or whatever, they're trying to have an overall farming operation. And so your customer is not just trying to, you know, work on this one issue. They have an overall result that they think that they're, and you're right. They, same with the customer. They sometimes have this goal in life of being the dominant force in a market. And you're like, you're not on the right path to do that. And you can't maybe necessarily tell them that blatantly, but you can walk them into the questioning process of how are you trying to get there? And the other tidbit I think that you said was really important is you hadn't thought about it till we talked about it. And I think the same thing with salespeople. When I go to do sales training, people that have been, I've got people in my sessions that have been there 20, 30 years, and they don't think about how they ask for the sale. I said, what words do you use to close the sale? And they're like, I don't know. I just do it. I'm like, well, what is it you actually say? And because we're trying to train some people nearby you that are just brand new and they don't know what to say. And they're like, well, here's a guy 30 years that doesn't know what to say. And so because sometimes the process becomes natural, it's like asking good questions. I can go into an operation and just because of your experience around that feed store or a grain elevator or whatever, I can start asking questions to get a feel whether they know their business or not. And I think you can do the same with your clients who you start asking questions, and initially you don't really have to prep it in those early phases. Now, I never go into my later phases unprepped. I always tell my training groups, you have the legal authority by the power invested in me by nobody to legally stalk your customer. If they put it on social media, you need to see it. Don't be embarrassed by going in and not reading the customer's website or finding out what their Facebook posts are like. And it's not that you're trying to find out whether they support one party or another, but you want to know a little sentiment about who they are as a person, what they're like and all that kind of stuff. And so I can't imagine you would never go into a trial unprepared for, you know, just shooting from the hip and winging it.
Well, it brings up an interesting subject when we talk about that. It goes back to when you're talking about taking a tour. One of the things that I do speak about is effective communication and to an association or a business, because I tie that into the culture of confidence concept. Right. And what people fail to understand or to really internalize, and I think even some salespeople, is everybody's favorite subject is themselves.
Yes.
And if you give me an opportunity to talk about myself, as I'm doing now, I'll talk about all sorts of stuff and you'll pick something up in that, or there's a possibility. So when you go in to a business, you need to get the individual talking about themselves and their business to find out those little nuggets, those little pieces of information that are going to be golden that you would have never thought to ask about, because he's going to tell you, your customer is going to tell you about his concerns, about the problem that you can solve for him if you'll let him tell you.
Yes. And I think one of the challenges that ag sales achieve, there's a multitude of people driving up and down the farm driveway, salespeople. And so the farmers get very good at, and I always tell people that they're very skilled at getting you off their farm. You know, it's give me your pitch. What do you got for me today? And so in my role playing, revealing a secret here, in my role playing, that's how it always starts, is the customer who plays the role of customer always says, you know, tell me what you got for me today. I've got 10 minutes. Give me your pitch. Because they know that the faster they can get you to start talking about your products, the faster they can get you off the farm, or they can just simply disappear and run away and hide and avoid you. So it's like they don't want to, but then if you do get in, so what ends up happening is a salesperson gets nervous. And when they get nervous, they don't ask questions. They start like, oh my gosh, I got to give my pitch. And so they start in on the pitch and they never ask questions. And the customer just slips out of that very easy. He says, I'm not interested. Thanks for the information. Leave me a brochure and I'll get back to you if I am interested. And so you never get to that phase of asking questions, and you have to be, I said, one of the toughest part of the selling process is getting past the point where they tell you that. And there's a lot of that goes into that. But one of the questions I maybe have for you is, tell me a little bit about how you prepare once you have a lot of information. How do you prepare? Or maybe when you don't, you say somebody's coming in for a pretty big trial, say it's a murder trial, and you know that I've got to prepare for this. How do you go about preparing some of the questions and some of the processes that you use for that?
Well, a trial is somewhat like a piece of theater. Mm-hmm. And the trial lawyers are the directors and the producers, and the witnesses are the actors. And what's interesting about it is you've got two producers and two directors, and sometimes more. Okay, and everybody's trying to control the courtroom. To be successful in the trial business, you have to figure out a story that you're going to tell the jury. And when I talk about a story, based on fact, based on what the facts are.
Right.
But you have to figure out how to tell the story to the jury and make them be the hero in the story. They are going to be the people who save the day with their verdict in your favor.
Ah, interesting. Right. Yes. Okay.
So they're going to keep little Jane over here from going to jail because they're lying about what she did. All right. Or they're going to award this guy a verdict and give him some money because some nasty crop herbicide some guy used over here on this farm killed all his corn or something. Okay.
Sure. Great.
All right. So in preparing then, what you do is you have to assign each witness a role and know what you're going to do with that witness.
Sure.
Every witness is simply like a building block, or to use a different term, a tool to get you to where you're going to go. So in preparing that, you look at each witness. Now, I've tried cases with only one witness.
Right. Right.
And then we tried cases that lasted 6 weeks. You just have to look at each witness, figure out what role they're going to play in your story, and then prepare your questions accordingly. Now, remember that we know what everybody's going to say before they get on the stand.
Right.
We either have their written statement or we have their deposition. So I take the key pieces out of that. I've taken your deposition in this case now.
Yep.
And I know what I want you to say. So I go through and I cherry pick those questions out of that deposition that I have asked you where you have given the right answers.
Right.
And I weave those together in a congruent fashion so that you can't say something else. So I say, now, right. Mr. Martinelli, and we're talking about cross-examining here. It's different when you're working with your own witnesses. When you're putting your own witnesses on, that's one of the worst times in the trial business, because you can't ask leading questions. You have to ask
Right.
questions of your own witnesses. And oh my God, they just go off the rails sometime. I'll tell you a story. Right. If I can share a story with you. So I'm trying this medical malpractice case one time where a man dies after an operation. And I can't recall all of the specific facts, but part of it had to do with following the doctor was saying that didn't properly follow orders after the surgery, and claims back and forth. And out of the blue, I have been preparing this case now. The widow was going to be the star witness. I've been preparing this case for about 3 years. I've met with her any number of times. I've gone through all this process. While she's on the stand, I can't remember how the question was asked, but she said, well, that's okay, because Bob didn't like doctors anyway, and he really didn't think they knew what they were doing. So,
So you revealed a piece of information that did not help a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's the worst part. But in the cross-examination part where we're going through the, so I've got to frame my questions when I have my own witnesses on in a very specific fashion, so they're on a leash. I know what I want them to say. And that's a problem, because a lot of times, Greg, in a trial, people want to be heard. They want to say what they want to say regardless.
Yes.
And you know, that's the way it is. In cross-examination, I have cherry-picked all the questions out that I want to ask you that lead you to where I want you to be. And I have written evidence right here in my deposition that you said it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, you know, as you talk about this, the attorney being the producer, and you've got this courtroom going on. I talk to the subject of a sales presentation. This is why coaching becomes very important. Selling somebody is a very busy environment. First of all, we're outside, so there could be weather, there can be interruptions, dogs, other family members. It's like a circus sometimes with what's going on, and you're trying to keep it all going. You get your props, and you got your iPad and your computer, and you got technology issues because there's no internet connection, and you're trying to get your phone to connect and be the. And then you got brother Billy who comes in and says he remembers working with your company 25 years ago, and then Grandpa comes in and you never know. And the phone is ringing, and so there's all this activity going on. And so no different than you, because you've got, we get objections. You've got another attorney on the other side, the prosecutor or whatever you want to call him, the state's attorney, who is shooting holes in you constantly, trying to disrupt you. And so in the selling process, you get objections like, yeah, I don't like that. Or that's too expensive, or whatever the objection is. So it's very busy. And what's amazing, and I don't know if I'm sure you've tried where you had an assistant lawyer with you, or you were an assistant or whatever, you get to see things because it's like a football stadium. You're sitting on the sidelines watching this salesperson go through this, and you see them just totally miss an opportunity.
Oh,
And,
sure.
just because it's so busy, you're trying to think of what's my next question, and what am I going to say, and what am I going to do, and now how do I handle this? And here comes Dad from across the barnyard, and now he's going to tell me that story again about why we screwed him 25 years ago. Somebody that was, I don't even know who they were. They wouldn't even work for our company anymore, but he's got that story. And so I think it's interesting because it's very similar. And you talked about your selling process. Zig Ziglar used to say that selling is a conveyance of a feeling. And what you're trying to convey to the jury is a feeling of somebody has been wronged or somebody is not being treated right. And you've got to, I know we're all innocent until proven guilty, but the fact that you're sitting in the courtroom means that somebody thinks you're pretty doggone guilty. It's so you are fighting an uphill battle, believe me. I've seen a few trials, and I think you are fighting an uphill battle that they wouldn't be here if they were just perfectly
Well,
pure.
sure. I mean, I've known the sheriff all my life, and he wouldn't arrest somebody who isn't guilty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the right. They don't lie. They don't do any of this stuff. Why would they put this guy here? And I used to be the same way. Many years ago, I was in jury trial and or jury duty, and I felt the same way. Like, why would he be there if he's not guilty? I mean, so no, those are great. Let me ask you, do you have any? I call it the power of one question, and maybe you don't have that, but do you have any experiences or stories from back where you said, I asked this one question, and it was such a powerful question, and it changed the way things happened, and anything you'd say, hey, this was something that how important questions are in changing the course of a situation.
The answer to the question, I'm gonna pull some trial lawyer stuff on you, all right?
Yeah.
So you asked me if I have any power of one question situations. That was your question, right?
Yes.
Okay, my answer is yes.
Great. Great. Thanks for my witness on the stand here, who just I asked a closed-end question. I got a closed-end answer. And so, well, tell me more about that. How did it go, and what was maybe the situation and the circumstances that it was such an influential question?
I wish I could recall just one. All sorts of scenarios are flying through my mind, and I can't pin down the exact question. I do remember one time taking a deposition of a police officer, and I asked some question. I can't tell you what it is, but we're in the middle of the deposition, and I asked the question. The police officer answers. Prosecutor slams his file shut, gets up, and he says, "I'm dismissing this case."
Oh wow, nice. Excellent. That
Yeah.
was a yeah, that was a you know, that's it, that it, that that's absolutely one of the best situations you can have. That's kind of like, okay, I'm done. I'll buy your products from you. So
He was so. Now, that was, I led the police officer there through a long, and I had gone over his report. I knew what he was going to say in that regard. I knew
sure.
he had already shut the door on himself in his report, and I just had
Right.
to
Right.
lay that out. And once
Yeah.
I laid that out, it was just so I can't, but I can't think of one specific question.
Well, I think what you're referring to is that you gathered the information. You went back, and he's got a report what he did. He's got sometimes they have video and pictures. It's like you can't deny what's in a picture or video. And I think that's the same with asking questions. Once they give you the answers, and you come back and you present to them, what are the problems you're having, what are the struggles? You've done the tour, you saw that the facility they got an old tractor, or they got a field full of weeds. You can't deny the fact that you got weeds in your field. It's and so I use that in training. I'll take people through training, and we'll evaluate a whole team on what their weak areas are, and then I say, okay, here's the results of what your weak areas are by the survey. They can't say, well, no, we don't need training in that, because it's you just told me this is what you need, And now you're telling me you don't need that. Did you lie or did you just not answer correctly? What is kind of the, you know, it's A or A, you know, and I don't do that to entrap. But it sort of is. It's just so that they don't dismiss you as just another salesperson coming down the pipe without asking good questions.
Well, it really is an entrapment. It's I look at it as having them acknowledge reality.
Yeah.
I mean, if you tell me that something is this way, but yet you kind of you deny it at the same time, let me help you realize where you are.
Okay? Exactly. What you're saying and what you're doing and you know what you look for a solution to your situation and how you can be better. And yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess any final thoughts that you've got for being a good person to ask good questions and that, anything you'd like to impart on a salesperson that's out there that's saying, how do I get better at asking better questions?
Have your question, I think the best advice I can give in that regard is ask questions that show concern about the client or the prospect that lead to you solving a problem for them. And right. Letting them see that. Show an interest in the people. There are people that I have eventually, and as a lawyer, I mean, I want to tell you, there's constantly somebody trying to sell you something. And there are people that it has taken a long time for me to come around to doing business with them.
Right.
But I did because the more contact I had with them, the more they could explain the benefit of their product.
Sure.
And it just, I don't know. So I don't have any special magic. There's no magic formula. If I had a magic formula, yeah, if I had a magic formula, I wouldn't be talking to you. All right.
Exactly. That's right. Well, I think there is definitely along those lines. Is there formal training? Maybe that's a good question. I know you talked about your informal training with your father years ago of going through that, and certainly 30 some years of trying cases gives you experience. Is there any kind of training that attorneys go through formalized that say, here's how you ask questions?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a young lawyer, I would go, there are constantly seminars and meetings and now in the modern age, webinars.
Sure.
For lawyers, we have to have 15 hours a year of continuing legal education mandatory. That's not really, that's a minimum standard. So Posnick is the guy's last name. I want to say Leroy, it might be Larry. There's a guy who has a whole niche on going out and lecturing on cross-examination and cross-examination techniques. So there's plenty of formal training. I served on the board of the Missouri Association of Trial Attorneys for a long, long time.
Sure.
And we were constantly putting on seminars and having speakers in. So yes, there's plenty of formal training. Formal training is necessary. I don't care how great my father was in passing along these techniques.
Sure.
Really knowing how to do it, knowing how to lay out that cross-examination. The things that I've told you here today probably came more from formal training that I put in practice.
Right.
Know where you're going. Pull these things out. Lay it out there. Because as a young lawyer, you're stumbling around. Yeah.
And I think one of the keys that I've seen in training is you can listen to, like, I'll take them through and I do my lecture and my PowerPoint presentation and I've got my written material. But when I put them in the role play and say, okay, go through here. And then I have an observer count open and close probe questions and evaluate them in a small group setting, you know, just the three of them, a customer, a prospect, and or a salesperson, a prospect, and an observer. And then go back and see, okay, how did the questions turn? I give them the criteria. Once they try to put it in practice, like, oh yeah, I do all that. And then you actually see, okay, let's debrief. How many open and close probe? Well, typically it's 3/4 closed probe questions because that's what they do when they get nervous. And then very few open probe, and it's the open probe questions where you get all the information. Kind of like what I did. I asked you, is there a question? You said, yes. Well, that didn't lead very far, you know? And you know, the expectation is that you would tell me what that question is, but customers do the same thing to us, and they shut us down and make us nervous. And the more nervous we get, the more closed probe we get. And so, but they learn that in role play, and even though they're experienced salespeople, they get that experience. So I think that's, it's important to have some of that.
Yeah, interesting enough, the value of what I would call continued training, because everybody in every profession falls into patterns that are not productive and that are not correct, but you think you're doing the right thing. And sure, until you have somebody come along, as you apparently do in your training sessions, and observe and evaluate what you're doing, you don't realize you're doing it.
Yes.
So when you're having these lacks of success in a certain area, you're not the person to be able to point it out to yourself.
Right. It's hard. Without a recorded, you don't even realize sometimes what you're saying or what you're missing or what you're asking. And the interesting thing about it is people that go through that, as the observer, and as you get to see other people's techniques. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's critical. You know, you just get to learn from each other. And it's funny because people will say, I never thought what it was like for our customers, but they get to play the role of the customer. And they're like, I didn't realize that's what we sounded like. I was like, yeah, that's, you don't sound like you care about me. It sounds like you care about selling your product. So you're very geared in on your product sale instead of geared in on me and my business. And so they're like, that's interesting. I've never felt like a customer before. And now I kind of get that behind the scenes view of what our customers feel when that's you do that. So, interesting. Well, Wayne, I appreciate you having you on here. I'll put your web link on there in case everybody wants to reach out and see your speaking topic, which is a culture of confidence. And it's a great experience to have known you and work with you and watch how you go about your speaking business and certainly talking about questioning techniques and all that kind of thing. So thank you very much for being on today.
Thank you for having me, Greg. It's been fun.
I hope today's podcast helped you on your journey to being the best ag sales professional you can be. If you ever have topics you'd like to hear about, or if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, please reach out. We're always looking for new ideas and new guests. And as always, you can access more blog articles and training opportunities on my website at gregmartinelli.net. That's www.gregmartinelli.net. Thank you and have a great day.